right, Congresswoman Dean, before I get into the introduction, I have one important question to ask. It seems the world's crazy. Are we going to be okay?
Oh, that's a sad opener, but we are going to be okay. I have confidence. I'm an optimist by my nature, by my very fiber, and I think that's part of why I ran for office. But yes, we're going to be okay. There's a lot of really good people who care about America moving forward, us moving forward, and doing the right thing.
Well, that's why I wanted to start with the question, because I knew you'd have a positive answer.
Yeah.
But for you listening, my name is Tony Heil. I am the council member from Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, and this is the You Should Run podcast, where we talk with people who've run for office. And we're talking today with my congresswoman, Madeline Dean. Very excited to have you on today to talk about why you've run for office and why more people should run, some of the challenges, because you have a more interesting career than most people do.
Oh, thanks. Love what I'm doing. And then at some point, can we turn the podcast around and I'll ask you these same questions?
You only have a few minutes. So the first question I always ask everyone is what got them interested in politics? Mm-hmm. But you didn't just get interested like in 2016 like some other people. You've been interested in politics your whole life, right?
Yeah, I have.
Do you have any like early memories or things that kind of stick out as, yeah, that was something that really motivated me to care about voting and participating?
I think maybe it's two things as I look back. I never really analyzed it until I got into office and people started to say, how did you get interested? One is that I grew up in the 60s. I was a little girl in the 60s and it was a tumultuous time in our country. I was part of a large Irish Catholic family, the youngest of seven. Two brothers serving during the time of the Vietnam War, one in Vietnam. And my parents were politically active, very against the war, and admired so many of our leaders of the 60s, mm-hmm. Jack Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, all of whom, of course, were assassinated. So I think the tumultuous times of the 60s and my observation and my interaction, even as a young person with my parents and their activism, their engagement, was part of the planting of the seed. But then literally at 18, I was asked to run for office. That's what got me started.
I'm sure you were very surprised.
Very surprised. Had no idea what they were even talking about. It was a girlfriend of mine in high school. She said her parents would love to come over to my house mm-hmm. And talk to me tonight, this evening, whatever it was, whatever school night it was. And they said, we have an idea for you, Mad. And this was Mr. and Mrs. Enright. And he was a township commissioner here in Abington. And picture me, I'm 18 years old. They said, we have an idea, we think you should run for office. And so I said, sure, what would that be? And said, run for committee person. So you know well what a committee mm-hmm. person does.
Did you know at the time?
No idea. But I said, boy, that sounds fun. I'll do it. I was also afraid. I thought, mm-hmm. How the heck do you do that? But it was really by being asked, that sort of that combination of what happened at my own dinner table, and then by somebody on the outside saying, maybe this is something you'd be interested in. It's a powerful combination.
Well, and then later you decided to run for state representative. And that was in 2012, right?
Right.
And at the time, the legislature in Harrisburg was Republican controlled, still is.
Right.
So it was kind of, you knew probably you'd be in the minority, right?
Yes, yes.
So what was your motivation then to run for state office?
Well, and what happened before that was I knew from the time I had served as a committee person for 4 years and worked on campaigns, met my husband, literally, mm-hmm. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, I knew I someday would want to run for public office. So the first office I ran for after that was actually in 2011, I ran for Abington Township Commissioner.
Right, I knew that, but your staff person said I only had so many minutes.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, but I thought that gets some credit. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for putting my toe in as a 50-year-old woman to say, can I do this? Will I even enjoy it? And so I ran and ran hard and knocked on lots of doors. You know the power of knocking on doors. And I won. And then, of course, I did have the opportunity and ran in a special election to fill Josh Shapiro's seat in 2012 in the legislature. Why did I want to do that? I knew I wanted to be in public service. I thought that was the place I could make the greatest difference, even though I'd had other careers and was a mom and really enjoyed what I was doing at home too. But the fact that I was going to be in the minority, I cared less about that. I cared about being in the House. I cared mm-hmm. about having a seat at the table and being a part of the conversation.
And I think from listening to other people I've talked with on the podcast, Seeing the people who are now in Congress, it's a really exciting time. It's better to have people running who want to be public servants than just, well, I should run because of some other reason.
Yeah, I think you're right. And this 116th Congress has such a diverse set of people, many of whom, as you point out, didn't ever run for office before, but felt compelled as a result of the 2016 election, that they needed to get in. They wanted their voice to be heard, their skill set to be a part of it. So a lot of people running for all good reasons, not for the stature of the job, but for how can I contribute? How can I make a difference?
So you did run in 2018, yes. And along with a lot of those new people, were the motivations the same running for Congress as they were for State House? Did you see things as a state legislator that you thought, we're not going to get this fixed unless we do something nationally?
The expression I kept using after what I thought was the devastating national election in 2016 of the current president, and I think a real failure in that election, was I kept saying, I want to expand my public service. I have very much enjoyed being in the Pennsylvania House. I was in for 6.5 years. Always playing defense because we are in the minority. I believe that will change in the upcoming cycles. But after 2016, I kept saying, I've got to do more. I have to do more. I have to expand my public service. I've got to break out and make a bigger difference. I didn't know exactly how to do it, but obviously the chance with these brand new maps in Pennsylvania to run for Congress was an extraordinary opportunity. So I seized it.
And it was not only an extraordinary opportunity for you, but for three other women in our area. You became a group called the Fab Four.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I've had to contact one of the offices for a legislative ask. And be like, well, Congresswoman Wild is supporting this. Can you support it too? You guys didn't know each other that well before then, right?
Didn't know each other at all.
Because I didn't know who Chrissy Houlihan was before 2018. I had friends, apparently, that knew Susan Wild, but I didn't know her before.
Right.
So did that make it a lot easier, especially being a woman and it's a minority, you know, there's more men in Congress, that make it easier meeting and having this team?
I don't know if it made it easier, but it definitely made it more enjoyable.
That's
so good. Maybe that means easier.
Well, you need something. It needs to be enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
You're working on a lot of campaigns.
That's right. And it made it feel less solitary. Sometimes you fear that you're out there and you're doing this thing sometimes alone, obviously staffed with great teams, but it was a really unusual time because consider the combination. Number one, we have fair districts. That's an exciting prospect here in Pennsylvania. My district, Montgomery County, as you know, historically has been carved up into as many as 5 districts with not a single congressman who served Montgomery County living in Montgomery County. So you have the combination of a district that's fair that I actually grew up in, and then this new breed of people running for office. And of course, women. We haven't had women since Allison Schwartz, who served for 10 years so ably, and she was the only woman in the Pennsylvania delegation, which was ridiculous and shocking. So it was really fun to actually partner with these women in certain places and do events and call ourselves the Fab Four. But it was also refreshing to people watching us do that. And so many people said, could you imagine 4 men doing that? It really probably likely has never happened and wouldn't happen. So I think what we saw was, A, we're all new at this. It's good to have friends. We could commiserate. We actually went out a couple times to blow off a little steam about whatever was going on. But we also thought together, you know, that notion of rising tide lifts all boats. If I succeed and I can help you succeed. And so it was so exciting when all 4 of us actually won.
Yeah, it was really neat to me watching that. And I was excited for those who had to win a primary, seeing that they were really good people winning a primary. Nothing against anyone they were running against, but it was fun to watch even from afar.
Yes.
So that made it more enjoyable. But what are some of the challenges? Are there challenges that were different for running for Congress than running for the other lower offices, which are just as important? But you know, you had to face different kind of challenges, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the challenges, they're just an expansion of geography. So you've got a much bigger territory, many more people to hit. I think back when I was running for township commissioner, it was 4,500 people. When I was running for state representative, it's 60,000 or more people. Then you're running for more than 700,000 people. So the geography of it, the demographics of it, just making sure we hit as many corners of the district as possible and many different diverse groups as possible. The dollars are daunting. Raising money is a really difficult, unfortunate, necessary part of politics, the way we run right now. And time.
Yeah.
There's just not enough time. So all those resources were stretched as far as we possibly could. That was the hardest part of it.
So speaking of time, and not about the amount of time we have to talk, but I saw this guy who's kind of running for president, and he was criticizing Congress, saying that they weren't doing anything during August.
Yeah.
And I've seen you. You're far from lazy, right?
Oh, well, thank you.
Kind of like wipe your hair out when you hear people say they're not doing anything.
Yes. Well, it's frustrating, but I think you're a constituent. You're also a public servant, so you're paying close attention to what your electeds are doing. It's a misnomer. I suffered it as a member of the Pennsylvania House,
right,
too, that you're on summer recess. We're back in our districts, and I'm so glad to have had this time back in the district as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're in session in Washington, I feel that I'm cheating the district.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be here. So what I did was I used the summer work period for a couple of things. One was to get out to as many companies as we could,
mm-hmm.
To visit with nonprofits, to visit with constituents, to visit with advocates, have town halls. So it's, you're right, I'm busy. Yesterday we were at an event for climate change.
Yeah.
The day before we did I participated in Tim Briggs' policy hearing on gun violence. We're gonna do a gun violence town hall tonight in Norristown. So it's far from being off, but it's actually work I love, and I love really taking the temperature of what matters to my constituents here.
It looks exhausting from my perspective. I appreciate it.
That's awful nice. I think I just feel such an urgency and a privilege to do it that I don't describe it as exhausting. It's energizing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like it's energizing. I was at one of your town halls, was able to ask a question about climate change. There was a forum just last night about it.
Right.
And it seems like there's so many issues, especially that one, that when you go to the debates and they're like, raise your hand if you want to do this thing.
Right.
You can't solve an issue in a 20-second soundbite, right?
Right. And you know what's interesting when you talk about climate change? We've been doing, and I haven't seen all the results yet, but we've been doing a survey, informal survey to our constituents. Take our survey if you haven't done it already, to find out what people care about.
Mm-hmm.
And as of yesterday's count, the number one issue was climate change. The number two issue was gun violence.
Yeah.
It's important to get that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the urgency around those two issues, but I want to see what my constituents think. And that's, so far, those are numbers one and two.
Does that help to, people hear that and they're like, oh, you're just listening to the polls, you're not, but it helps to kind of direct your energy and attention, right?
Well, it informs me.
Mm-hmm.
And it also informs me of, do my constituents care about the same things I care about? Those are two issues I've been working on since I got into public service.
Yeah.
Sadly, there's a greater urgency now since the seven plus years now that I've been in. On climate change, I always say, when everybody from the Pope, the Pentagon, to prisoners tell us this is the number one threat to our future, we ought to be paying attention, and public servants and policymakers ought to be making changes to protect our planet and protect our right to this planet for my generation, but also obviously for my grandchildren and grandchildren beyond. But on gun violence, sadly, look at this summer. It's shooting after shooting after shooting, mass shooting after mass shooting, and of course the daily toll of gun violence in urban areas and elsewhere. So I'm pleased to get that feedback. It isn't like my work is poll driven, but I guess I'm sadly pleased that my constituents so far in this sampling believe that these are two urgent problems, because I believe they're two urgent problems.
Yeah, and I can't understand how someone in Congress who sees the information you see can't be doing the same things, because they don't seem like trivial items.
No,
like some issues are.
Exactly. And one is, climate change is an existential threat.
Right.
We don't get our hands around this.
Mm-hmm.
We might lose the opportunity to get our hands around it.
Right.
The other is a social epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the chance to change that.
Right.
And that's why I'm... you said something about whether somebody makes a comment of, look at them, they're home for recess, that Congress is doing nothing. The other thing that people sometimes say is Congress is doing nothing about gun violence. But because of the noise of the media, maybe people miss the fact that the House, the U.S. House, in February passed universal background checks. In February passed closing of the Charleston loophole. Sent those two bills over to the Senate. That's 6 months ago.
And you would have done it in January if Congress had opened on time.
How about that? We walked in and were sworn in a furlough. And the harm that that did, we are still feeling the effects of that.
Right. It makes me frustrated as someone in government at a small lower level, frustrated because you guys should just work. Not you, but you know that things shouldn't work this way.
That's right.
That's not how responsible people act.
No, it isn't. And think of the body I'm talking about, mm-hmm. the United States Senate. One of the most important legislative bodies on the planet,
mm-hmm.
and they're sitting on their hands in the face of the gun death rate in this country. You know, this is back to school week for a lot of our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son just started kindergarten last week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. Such an exciting time.
Yeah.
My granddaughter went to first day of second grade today. Mm-hmm. By the way, she rode her bike. You'll be proud to hear this. She insisted on riding her bike, and so her parents had to walk behind her,
yeah.
which I think is perfect based on a lot of the things we're talking about.
Yeah.
But also, it makes me so sad and so thoughtful to think your child in kindergarten, my granddaughter in second grade, will have to endure active shooter drills. And, mm-hmm. and maybe they'll use a euphemism, particularly for younger children, call it something that isn't about possibility of school shootings. But it's a stunning turn of events that in the past 6-8 years, that's the reality for our children. They walk in and a place that you and I believe should be, I'm not being presumptuous, I'm pretty sure you think it too, should be the safe haven.
Right.
Their schools, their place to learn, to grow, to thrive, is a place that they are fearful of. That they know that there are precautions that have to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just eager to get back to work, to do something on the issue of gun violence, to force the Senate to do its job. How can a body as important as the U.S. Senate not respond to the tragedy that is the death of 40,000 people a year in this country, another 134,000 wounded caught in the crossfire, and as we got to thinking this week, uncounted, untold number who are traumatized, including our children.
Yeah, the trauma, we don't get those numbers, you're right.
Yep.
I'm in the car with my son, I listen to NPR a lot, and everyone gets mad when their little kid says a bad word, but it's easier to correct that than when he starts hearing the things on NPR about the latest shooting. I have to turn off the news.
You have to turn it off.
And he wants to hear. He's eager to hear what's going on.
Yeah.
So I have to turn it off.
They're so smart and eager to know what's going on around them.
Yeah. It feels odd to me and frustrating to you, maybe. You work across the aisle. You're putting posts up. And it's a good thing to do that. But on the other hand, you want that person probably to lose their job, right? Like, is that kind of a feeling, too? Like, or do you want to just change their mind?
I guess I'm more a public servant before I'm a political animal.
Right.
So I'm hoping to bridge gaps and to make, I just saw interviewed yesterday General Mattis, and he said, you know, the only way that we're going to move forward is when you sit across the table with somebody with whom you don't agree and try to hash out, take your time to come to common goals. And instead of just, you see it so often in politics, just the, I'm stuck in this position, you're stuck in that position.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I want more Democrats in the House, and I really want more Democrats in the Senate, but what that really means is I want people who are going to vote to protect the planet, to save lives, to educate our kids, to grow the economy, to do for the many instead of doing for the very few.
Right.
So that's my hope, that you know, that with the Senate, for example, on these gun bills, I was asked, do you think that you have the votes to pass it in the Senate? And sadly, I don't think we do,
but
I think we are owed the vote.
Yeah.
And that will inform the people who are voting for their senators whether or not they reflect their wishes.
Right.
And in the meantime, if the electorate sees a Senate not working, hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Force them to come to votes on these things or vote them out.
And you think, and I'm sure you're going to agree, someone that focuses on policy first ends up making you a better political person.
I hope so.
Because you know how to address those issues and come up in surveys or come up in town halls, et cetera.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know what? I've actually passed a bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of amazed because, as you pointed out, I was in the minority in the Pennsylvania House, so passing bills wasn't really an option, sadly. That's how polarized the state legislature is.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the past. that a certain percentage of minority bills would come up and get a fair vote. It's really dwindled to almost nothing. So here I am, a freshman. Within 7 months, I got a bill passed. I'm proud to have gotten a bill passed, but I'm really happy that I did it with a member from the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Guy Rushenthaler from the western part of Pennsylvania, also a freshman, and we passed a bill called the Stoic Act, signed by President Trump,
mm-hmm.
Just before I left for district work period. But it was bipartisan,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with suicide. And suicide, particularly among law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So this is state grant. This is supporting grants to law enforcement departments and agencies to prevent law enforcement suicide. It is on the increase. Sadly, the numbers of law enforcement officers dead by suicide has overtopped law enforcement caught killed in the line of duty. So it's, again, a growing epidemic, but I'm happy to pass legislation with members of the other party.
And that reflects back on your discussion about guns, with how many people are traumatized by it.
Yeah.
Clearly people in law enforcement.
Exactly right.
Suicide is so important to me. I've had many people in my family even affected by suicide.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I'm very
uncle,
sorry.
I believe, and well, it's just so important.
It is, yeah.
So with all that said, with what you've been able to accomplish, why should more people run for office? Whether it's for Congress, not against you, of course, but
yeah.
You know, in general, why should people run for different kinds of offices since you've had different experiences?
Because I think we'll get different results.
Mm.
We'll get better results. The more people who run, the more people who feel that their voice should be heard, that their life experience, their expertise, their passions might add to the conversation, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about diversity. One of the things we talk about is diversity in any organization.
Mm-hmm.
The more diverse our Congress is, I think the more successful our Congress is,
mm-hmm.
more problems we're going to solve. If we just have cookie-cutter-like people who always are the people who run for office, we're not going to have the dexterity of ideas and problem-solving. So I think there's a lot of people who have the talent that can make a difference, and I think this is a job about making little differences that hopefully add up to big differences. So I want more diverse people with diverse experiences and passions to come forward. One of the things that I think keeps people out are the mean-spiritedness of it, and in this day and age, sometimes the lack of valuing the truth.
Yeah.
And the difficulty of cutting through to make sure we're hearing the truth. So I encourage, but I think you know, in this county, we have a really engaged electorate and
mm-hmm.
a lot of neat people like you running for office. So I think it is just, as this is going to sound trite, but I don't mean it this way, to make this country, this world, a better place for the many, not the few.
Yeah.
That's why people should run for office.
No, perfect. I appreciate that. And I think that diversity, I was talking with Sarah Peters. She's an assemblywoman from Nevada.
Yeah.
She's 32, 33 years old,
hmm.
an environmental engineer. And that diversity makes people who are in office more comfortable bringing up issues that they wouldn't have otherwise.
That's right.
If you were the only woman in your caucus on the judiciary, you may, and you didn't have your experience, you may feel less comfortable bringing up certain topics.
That's right.
And yet I see you, you know, a testimony, you're bringing up things that someone else wouldn't have brought up.
Right.
You know, if I was a congressman, we might vote the same way, but I wouldn't have brought that up.
Right. Yeah. And that doesn't make either one of us bad, but it adds to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Different perspectives, different experiences, life experiences, and expertise. I think it just really makes the conversation fuller. And I hope breaks through the absolute partisan
right.
knee-jerk gridlock. You know?
Well, I appreciate you setting that example. Hopefully that example is going to lead to other people feeling more comfortable to do it themselves. One last thing, when and how should people start?
Oh, that's...
To get involved.
Anytime.
Yes.
I bet you've run into this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running into people in their 70s who
mm-hmm.
say, I've never been involved in politics before. I've paid attention to our country, our government.
Mm-hmm.
Never been involved before. I'm involved now. I feel an urgency to do it, and they're loving it. And I've had people on my campaign who were 15, 16, so engaged, annoyed they couldn't vote,
yeah.
couldn't wait for the first time to vote, so, and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
It's never too soon, and it's never too late.
Yeah. My son's 5 and he hasn't missed an election once.
See that?
He's voted 10 elections so far, about to hit the button.
Do I get to ask you a question?
You can ask me any question you want.
Okay. What got you interested in public service?
I remember my parents talking about politics. I specifically remember the 92 election with my mom criticizing my dad, asking him who he voted for. But my mom has MS, so healthcare has always been important to me. Paul Wellstone, I think, was my kind of idol, not because of his politics, though that was part of it, but more because he was a person with MS in politics.
Yeah.
And I can just see you can make a difference.
Interesting.
Of course, I got out of college. I interned at WNBC in New York City in 2002. So being part of that, every generation has a traumatic event that kind of inspires people.
That's true.
And just like you said, so many people now feel like they have to be involved. I can't. So I went and got involved in campaigns after that.
Wow. And what made you decide I'm going to be the one to run?
There was a need. And people, I knew, just like you, I always wanted to do it. And people said, this is the opportunity to do it.
This is your door.
So if you don't, no one else is going to do it.
That's
and
right.
Just like you probably with your experience, after you do more of it, the more intoxicating it gets because I can help somebody.
Right.
And that's really fun. Maybe no one knows. I see the people in your office doing constituent services.
Yeah.
They do a great job. It's really fun to know that that person and you are the people that know that something.
That's right. Sometimes I would be driving home from Harrisburg frustrated by, you know, being in the minority, not getting anywhere, beating my head against the wall. And driving home, I would call Kathleen Joyce, my district director, and say, what did we do today?
Mm-hmm.
Who did we help? And she would tell me stories, smallest stories to the biggest stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from helping an old person get a handicap placard to people who were homeless in our office.
Mm-hmm.
And how we cobbled together efforts and got them shelter. They literally needed car seats to move their children to that shelter. Everybody went home, grabbed their car seats. You know, just the helping in small ways that will never be sung, and you don't want them to be sung. But you think, oh my gosh, I made an important small difference in that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the intoxication of it.
Yeah.
You're making a difference. You're helping people. And I'm glad you chose to run.
And if you, for whatever reason, had to leave office tomorrow because of health issues or something happened,
right,
you at least have something to say to yourself.
Yeah.
I did something.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody, I'm forgetting who it is, I should know, but somebody said, politics and public service is about possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so neat about it. You just think of the possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, I could possibly influence what we do about climate change. I could possibly help save lives from gun violence. You know, I could possibly reduce the burden of student debt with legislation I'm pushing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the possibilities of it are what's really intoxicating.
But you can't make it possible if you don't do something.
That's right.
So if you're listening, if you're considering, lead by a congresswoman's example, and maybe you should run for office.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
I agree with you. Thanks.